Welcome back to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. Today's episode is called The Keyboard, and in it we are exploring the history and repertoire of one of Western music's most utilized instruments, the piano. We've talked about some of its predecessors, the dulcimer, the harpsichord, the organ, the pianoforte, and we've talked about the great keyboard music of the Baroque and classical eras. Just before the break, we started venturing into the 19th century, the majority of which is referred to as the Romantic era. This is when the piano started taking the form as we know it today. One composer, pianist, and teacher who was prominent at this time was Franz Liszt. Probably Liszt's greatest contribution to music was his work as a piano teacher, but he was also a captivating performer and a prolific composer. Among his hundreds of piano compositions, a good portion of them are compositions by other composers that he transcribed or arranged for piano. So I thought I should play you one of these here. And not being sure which one to play, I went to the office next to mine to ask my colleague and wonderful pianist, Mark Jenkins, which one I should play. I simply said, "Favorite Liszt transcription?" Without missing a beat, he said, "Gounod." So after that two-second conversation, it was decided. Here's a transcription of Waltz from Charles Gounod's opera Faust by Franz Liszt, performed here by the Hungarian pianist Georg Cifra.
Thank you.
So that was a transcription for the piano by Franz Liszt. That was pianist Georg Ziffre playing the waltz from the opera Faust by Charles Gounod. So that wasn't a piece originally written for the piano, but Liszt transcribed or arranged, or condensed, if you will, Gounod's work for the piano. And as was customary of composers in this day, he made it as showy and technically difficult as reasonably possible, which added to the entertainment value, you could say, but it also showed off the latest developments of this grand instrument known as the piano. The Romantic era is when some of the most demanding piano music started to be written, and Liszt and Chopin, who also wrote many demanding works, were in good company with the likes of Robert Schumann, another composer who wrote many great piano pieces at this time. Schumann wrote an extremely difficult toccata. The term toccata almost always signifies a technically demanding, showy piece. Here is Schumann's Toccata in C, Opus 7, performed by Vladimir Horowitz.
Thank you. Hi, I'm pianist Marcin Koziak, and you're listening to Music for Life on KPCG.
On today's episode, titled The Keyboard, we are exploring the history and repertoire of one of Western music's most utilized instruments, the piano. That was Robert Schumann's famously difficult, technically awkward, Toccata, Opus 7, in a recording by pianist Vladimir Horowitz. The term toccata almost always signifies a technically demanding, showy piece. As we move into the 20th century, we have some toccatas written by French impressionist composers like Claude Debussy. The final movement of his suite that is simply called For the Piano is a toccata as well. Here it is performed by Jean-Bernard Pommier. That was the last movement of a suite by Claude Debussy titled For the Piano. That movement was called toccata, a term that has been applied to showy keyboard pieces, all the way back to Bach's day with his famous organ toccatas, to the great toccatas of the 20th century. Pianist Jean-Bernard Pommier was in that recording. As we move into the 20th century and discuss the use of the piano and keyboard instruments at this time, the so-called modern era, I should mention that this was a time of great experimentation. Composers at this time were challenging the very notion of music, and oftentimes, along with that, challenging the way an instrument was played. Instead of playing the piano by pressing the keys, some composers would have pianists stand up and directly pluck or strum the strings inside the piano. Other composers would alter the sound of the instrument by placing objects in between or on top of the piano's strings. This technique was known as prepared piano. Objects used in prepared piano compositions would include nails, pieces of rubber, nuts, or bolts. Depending on the object, the sound that would result from pressing one of the keys would range from a dull percussive sound to a sharper bell-like tone. Prepared piano also included other preparations like covering the hammers with metal or leather, or perhaps sticking small nails in the hammers to create percussive sounds. American composer John Cage is mostly associated with this method of experimentation. Here is his Sonata 2 for prepared piano, performed by Boris Berman. All the sounds you're hearing, even the drum-like sounds, are being produced by the pianist pushing down the keys. So that was a 20th century composition during an experimental time in music and piano history, a sonata for prepared piano by John Cage in a recording by pianist Boris Berman. Prepared piano referred to the practice of putting objects in the strings of the piano to create non-traditional sounds from this instrument. Objects like pieces of rubber, nails, bolts, or nuts. So you could say this music is a little nuts. One other experiment happening in the 20th century that impacted the piano was the practice of experimenting with microtones. See, the keyboard divides the octave into 12 equal half steps, or semitones as some people call them, which can easily be seen on the piano by the pattern of 7 white notes and the 5 black notes per octave. Microtones refer to musical intervals that are smaller than these half steps, or these semitones. An example would be, instead of notes being a half step apart, they could be divided into quarter steps. Certain instruments can create these microtones easier than others, but it's nearly impossible on a standard piano. When the American composer Charles Ives was experimenting with microtonal music, he required two pianos to be tuned a quarter step apart for a certain composition. Because of this microtonal tuning, not only does this sound non-traditional, but it creates quite a dissonant and unsettling sound. I'll only give you a little of this. Here's a recording by pianists Alexei Lubimov and Pierre-Laurent Aimard. So that was just a brief, but long enough, example of a microtonal composition that required two pianos tuned a quarter step apart, as we term it. Usually the smallest step in music that we are accustomed to is the half step, so these quarter tones create an unusual aural tapestry. So that's another non-traditional use of the piano in the 20th century, a work by the American composer Charles Ives called Three Quarter Tone Pieces. Along the lines of something slightly less avant-garde is a great set of pieces by the Argentine composer Alberto Ginastera. The first of his Danzas Argentinas is particularly interesting in terms of how it is composed for the piano. The slightly odd nature of the sound that you hear is created by Ginastera writing most of the left-hand's notes exclusively for the black keys and most of the right-hand notes specifically for the white keys. Here's the short first movement performed here by Mauro Lo Conte. Mauro Lo Conte was the pianist in that recording of the first of three Argentine dances by Alberto Ginastera. The keyboard layout itself was significant in the construction of that work and also contributed to the unusual sound. That is, Ginastera wrote most of the left-hand notes to be played almost exclusively on the black keys, while most of the right-hand notes were played on the white keys. We're discussing some interesting uses and developments of the piano in the 20th century. One other 20th century variation on the piano was the advent of the electric piano. The first electric piano dates back to the mid-20th century, but they have come a long way since then. Modern electric pianos have high-quality recorded sounds on an internal hard drive designed to simulate the timbre of a real piano. The keys are often weighted in order to replicate the feel of a real piano as much as possible. Related to these instruments would be the keyboard instruments known as synthesizers. These modern instruments are capable of mimicking existing sounds like instruments, vocals, or natural sounds, but can also generate new electronic sounds. Now, there are also synthesizers that can be controlled by mechanisms other than the traditional keyboard layout. There are guitar synthesizers, electronic drums, among other forms of synthesizers. But I thought it worth mentioning in the context of our exploration of keyboard and piano history, since synthesizers are not just used in popular music, but also in contemporary classical compositions of the 20th and 21st centuries. Now, in spite of these avant-garde experimentations, the piano was still being used in more traditional ways in the modern era, and the demands on the pianist were being stretched, and in some cases, quite literally. One of the great composers for piano in the 20th century was Sergei Rachmaninoff. Now, I should say, based on the kind of music he was writing, I don't classify him as a 20th century or modern composer. He was still writing romantic music well into the 1940s. This Russian composer died in 1943 in Beverly Hills, California. His piano music was known for its extreme technical demands and unusual requirement for large hands. Rachmaninoff himself had unusually large hands. His finger span was about 12 to 13 keys. That means if you put your thumb on a piano key and call that key number one, then his pinky could reach to key number 12 or 13. Most pianists can reach about 9 or 10 keys. So that's an unusually large hand. Now, of the dozens of solo piano pieces he wrote over the course of his life, 24 of them were called preludes, and they were in all the major and minor keys, much like Bach did with his set of preludes and fugues. We're going to hear one of my favorite preludes. This is the second one of the Opus 23 set. This is in B-flat, and it's extremely virtuosic and exuberant. Here's a recording from a live performance by pianist Yevgeny Kissin. That was an example of a piano piece by Sergei Rachmaninoff, a composer of the late 19th century who lived well into the 20th century and continued to write in the Romantic era style, much of it for the piano. His amazing technique and unusually large hand span spawned some extremely difficult piano music. That was the Prelude in B-flat, Opus 23, No. 2, performed by pianist Yevgeny Kissin. Rachmaninoff had moved to America in 1917 after the Bolshevik Revolution. American composers, meanwhile, were creating quite a repertoire for the piano themselves at this time. And one musical style America had that no one else had yet was jazz. A successful pianist and composer who fused these jazz styles into his piano compositions was George Gershwin. His most famous piano work was his Rhapsody in Blue, a piece for piano and orchestra that plays much like a one-movement concerto. But he also wrote a piano concerto with a typical three-movement structure. Here is the final movement of his concerto in F minor for piano and orchestra. This is pianist Raimondi Campisi with l'Orchestra Filarmonica Italiana under Alessandro Arrigoni.
Thank you.
pianist Raimondi Campisi performed the final movement of the Concerto in F minor by George Gershwin, that was with Alessandro Arrigoni conducting l'Orchestra Filarmonica Italiana. That was an example of a great piano piece from the 20th century American repertoire. We've been discussing the history and great repertoire of the keyboard instruments, specifically the piano, here of late. Now let's talk more about the educational benefits of the piano, and for that, we will get into our Classroom Corner segment, where we explore different methods and curricula for introducing young people to music. Young people benefit a lot from starting private music instruction on a keyboard-based instrument, from both a mental and physical standpoint. And by a keyboard-based instrument, I basically mean the piano, not an actual electric keyboard. I'm talking more about the keyboard layout. Apart from better test scores, self-esteem improvements, which result from music lessons of any kind, there are benefits exclusive to a keyboard-based instrument. Studies find that students who play piano in particular score higher on math exams, particularly on problems dealing with fractions and ratios. Piano lessons also increase hand-eye coordination. The complexity of both hands working independently of each other improves a student's fine motor skills, overall dexterity, and complex thought processes. Reading musical notation for two separate hands requires a great deal of concentration, translating what is written on the page to independent hand movements. Because reading notation is required, a student's natural learning process is developed. Reading notation is much like learning another language or learning how to read even in your own language. The requirement to play multiple notes at the same time can even provide the student deeper awareness of the theory, or grammar you could say, of the musical language. In addition to music theory advantages, there are also music appreciation benefits. Students who play such a historically significant instrument also can become well-rounded in their understanding of music history and therefore develop a greater appreciation for a variety of different composers. Additionally, the skills and knowledge developed from playing the piano will help students pick up other instruments later on, as the piano requires them to become familiar with both treble and bass clefs, the most common clefs for other musical instruments, the principle of breaking down the music learning process into separate components, like hands-alone practice, will come in, well, handy, when deciding to learn any other instrument. This has been Classroom Corner. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. On today's episode, titled The Keyboard, we have explored the history and repertoire of one of Western music's most utilized instruments, the piano. Remember, you can follow this show on Twitter at MusicForLifePCG. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/MusicForLifePCG. You can like us there. You can rate us on iTunes, where all of our episodes are. You can also like our tracks on SoundCloud. All of our episodes, all of our teasers, even some special segments are on SoundCloud as well. And you can also find us, of course, on kpcg.fm in the show archives. Finally, let's have our dessert, where we hear an example from the popular or folk tradition to end the program. This is a piece from the ragtime tradition. Ragtime is a genre of popular music known for its syncopated rhythms, or ragged time. Placed over a steady march-like beat, its heyday was the latter 1890s to the end of the First World War. It was predominantly piano music, and its most famous composer was Scott Joplin. But we're going to hear a rag by Zez Confrey. This particular rag ties in well with our program today because the title is about piano keys, particularly the idea of a cat walking all over the keys. Just over halfway through, you'll hear these descending tone clusters start way up high and descend down the keyboard, and it's almost like what a cat might sound like dancing down the keyboard. Here is Ettore Anciparizza performing Zez Confrey's rag, Kitten on the Keys. Thank you. You have been listening to Music for Life. From the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, I'm Ryan Malone. Thanks for joining me.